This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from Greensboro, North Carolina.
My name is Joe Rotundi. I'm the executive director of Forge Greensboro, which is a makerspace in downtown Greensboro.
How did this happen?
It happened about 5 years ago. A group of people started meeting in coffee shops, and they wanted to essentially merge their garages together because they were tired of working by themselves, or they're tired of borrowing tools from people and not getting
them back. Was coming.
So they figured if they put them all in one place, they can gather all their talents in one place, they can gather all their tools in one place and make things and collaborate and learn from each other.
Since you've done that, it follows that you've opened it to more makers of things. What's the access? What is the fee? How much does it cost? What's the process?
So it works much like a gym. So people pay month to month. They get 24/7 access. Right now, our standard membership is $54 a month. The goal of that core group of members who started the space, access was really important. And so removing that financial barrier as much as they could was a big goal, getting donations of equipment, that sort of thing. So we're really about trying to get people into the space because the end goal is to get people hands-on, making things, learning how to make things, doing project-based learning, and, you know, expressing themselves creatively with their hands.
Follows that central to the whole model is community. You know, for example, 3D printing, how cool, but I don't know anything about it. So it follows that I could come here, somebody would help me and tutor me.
Right, so there's that other barrier, that knowledge barrier, and that's where the community comes in. Most of the education that happens in this space and has happened in this space has been like a peer-to-peer mentoring network where you come in with an interest, you barter your skills, you know, somebody who knows a 3D printer teaches somebody about woodworking, and vice versa. Bartering with pizza and beer goes a long way here too.
I love that.
Yeah, and the space itself is dictated by how members use it. So as members start using the space or have an interest in specific making skills or styles, we start evolving. That's how we evolved the ceramics area in the space. About 2 years ago, we didn't have a ceramics area, but a group of members joined, were interested in us having one, and they found equipment, started growing it around there. We had more members join, and we started allocating resources that direction.
How about expansion physical space in the future? Is that possible?
Yeah, it's actually next year. I'm currently engaged in a fundraising campaign to expand into the rest of this building to add on 30,000 square feet, 3,000 square feet to test some of our programs in the space to see if we can come up with a model that will allow us to expand further.
So it follows as I'm listening to you and looking around that there are the different levels of the Forge. And one, for me, it'd be cool just to have access to different tools and different little genius guys working on their projects.
Right.
But then I can envision somebody coming here and working on something and somebody else going, you know, your little product would be a great commercial endeavor. Have you birthed any startup people out of here?
Yeah, absolutely. So we joke about the Forge being like a gym for people like to build things. The real underlying goal of the Forge is it's a social experiment. So we use these tools in this space to attract a bunch of creative, interesting people to the same space from diverse backgrounds, so they talk to each other. And there's this interesting thing that happens when humans talk to each other from diverse backgrounds is they come up with new ideas. We've been doing it for thousands of years, and the makerspace is another model in which to create that organically. So we've seen members in here start businesses, create new products, invent prototypes. Some of them I'm not allowed to talk about because of non-disclosure agreements. But there's probably about 30 different businesses operating out of the space right now, all at different levels. So some may be like Etsy shops or artisans, and others are shipping out products around the country.
That's really cool. So from an economic development standpoint of a community, you would follow that the city would be a real strong supporter.
Yeah, the city's come forward and helped us purchase a couple pieces of equipment. I'll be approaching them about some other expansion stuff. They've been a big help. The chambers helped us out with a lot of connections. The city and the chamber have both, you know, helped us out with collaborating with a lot of other individuals, finding sponsors for the space, and getting our message out there. Have somebody who's really passionate about what they do, and they want to talk about it all the time. It's very common with somebody who is sitting there wanting to soak it all up like a sponge because they want to learn new things. We also say that we're probably saving marriages in that way, too. They don't go home and subject their wives or partners to talking about it all the time. But
she still gets it.
But that happens all the time. That's one example of how we value diversity inside the space. You know, we have a lot of different kinds of tools inside the space because we expect there to be cross-pollination, and we make a lot of effort in getting a lot of different kinds of people in the space from different age groups, retirees coming in the space, retired trades professionals are super valuable in a space like this, different genders, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different racial and ethnic groups. So you get a lot of different people in the room around the table. They come up with a lot of unique ideas, hopefully unique solutions to problems, as opposed to you get a lot of the same people around the table. You're probably going to come up with the same answers and probably the same problems.
Sounds like this ought to be a university extension for the Department of Sociology and Psychology.
It could be. It would be a pretty long and complicated study.
A lot of raw material.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I can't keep my eyes on you because so many fascinating machines and stuff around us.
Yeah.
Give us a little highlight, like what's to your left there?
So we're sitting in what we call the soft space. So we keep a lot of our forms of making in here where it's hard to hurt yourself. So we have our 3D printers directly next to us. These ones are kit 3D printers, which we got donated and a couple members got together and assembled them for us. So we were able to get them a lot cheaper than if we were to buy them directly off the shelf. And they're great tools for learning because they're little CNC machines. And so they, you know, you take a model from a computer program, a CAD program where you've designed it, and then you take it to a CAM program, which defines that model as a tool path for a machine. And for a 3D printer, it's called a slicer, because it slices that 3D model into hundreds or thousands of layers and then spits out a melted plastic layer upon layer to build a full 3D model. We have other CNC machines. I think it's one of the big benefits of having a makerspace inside a community is people can gain access to very expensive tools and equipment or very complicated tools and equipment that would be tough or challenging for them to purchase and maintain in their own home or to, if you're a startup, having to purchase or lease a piece of equipment and maintain that piece of equipment and then have a building large enough to maintain that equipment, you're going through a lot of risks before you even know if you have a viable market and a viable product. And so in a space like this where you can have 3D printers, the laser engravers, laser etchers are also CNC machines. Instead of spitting out a molten plastic, they spit out a laser, you know? And then in the metal shop and the wood shop where we have the hard space, more dangerous tools, we also have a CNC milling machine and then a CNC router. A ShopBot CNC router.
Router does some real fine work.
It does. It does, and it'll cut through deeper material, thicker material. It's also powerful enough to do non-ferrous metals, so you can do aluminum on it. Actually, one of the local bars, South End Brewing, their bar top will have been etched on our CNC router.
So a lot of real practical applications.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of the work you see on this block has been made by artisans or makers here at the Forge. You know, as word gets out that there's a collection of creative people here, we've started to get more and more requests for work. And that's led some people to, you know, change their career paths.
Interesting. Can you think of an example of a game changer for somebody?
Yeah, well, recently we've found a lot of this stuff happening organically in the space. So going back in time, we were just looking at it being a hobbyist space, and I think that's really important. Tom, I think you mentioned that you elect to make things with your hands. Not everybody does, but having a healthy hobby where you can physically express your creativity is really important to just mental health. So I like to talk about the hobby stuff, even though it doesn't tie directly to economic development, but I think it ties directly to the cultural development in the area.
Again, like you alluded to, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? So we talk about accidental hobbyists like Steve, and we also started to see people coming in and using the space to either learn new skills or to upskill. So say they were working in a local manufacturer and they wanted to make more money by running a different machine. So they'd come in here and start practicing on the machine, or if they're a student at a local trade school and they want to come here and practice their work or practice what they were learning in the classroom when school wasn't open. They were starting to use this space for that. And we were starting to get school groups into the space. Teachers were bringing their classes by because, I don't know if you've noticed, but shop class has slowly started disappearing from a lot of different schools. And kids still need that exposure to this sorts of intelligence, which is very much a hands-on, trades-based, physical application intelligence. And so once we started seeing that, we moved into this larger building and started experimenting with some programs. And one of those programs is called Skills Bootcamp, which is an intensive career discovery program. And we partner with other nonprofits who have career development programs. And we just had one woman who, when she came through our program, she was experiencing homelessness. And she came out of the program, was super excited about becoming a machinist. She learned about making on one of the mills and was like, this is, I don't know why no one told me about this before. This is where I want my life to go. She since has found housing. She's applied for and is now taking classes at GTCC to become a machinist. And with her story, we've been able to get some additional funding through the SBA to expand that program to a pre-apprenticeship program. So she's going to be coming back here to learn more and, you know, go into a career in machining.
I love it. Great story.
Yeah. And so that happened because people came in and used this space and saw the potential and sort of taught us how we should start building programming. It's very much community driven.
So it teaches itself on the fly then.
Yeah, right. Definitely. It's definitely a just-in-time learning design thinking model here.
I love it. Are there other maker spaces in different communities in North Carolina that you know of and interact with?
Yes. So there is a makerspace in Burlington called Steam Junction. They're more focused towards early education, though they do have a membership model. It's an interesting model where they're a for-profit makerspace run by a nonprofit community. And then there's just, I think last year, a makerspace opened in Winston-Salem called Mixer. About the same amount of space as we do, though they're not 24/7, and they don't have as much staff. They haven't been around as long.
24/7?
Yeah, so our facility, members get a key, and they have 24/7 access to the space.
Wow. So you have the little inventor genius who's here at 2 in the morning then.
Yeah. Or if you have, you know, if you have an order and you have a deadline, you know, well, I need to work outside the hours of 9 to 5. I need to be able to come in here and knock out a few products in the middle of the night. You can do that here.
And how about physical dedicated space for you or me?
We do have a couple spaces. We experimented with, you see over behind you, Tom, there's like some sort of closet spaces that we rent out. And that's mainly rented out to people who are starting businesses here. When we expand into the rest of the building, we're going to be using that area as more of a soft space, a classroom space. And then where we're sitting now, we'll be doling this out into studio spaces.
Be delineated, defined by something, half walls or whatever.
Yeah, we're going to try to make it as flexible as possible. It's difficult defining storage space in a space like this when you have things that are stored like a spool of filament for 3D printers is relatively small, and then you have 20-foot pieces of iron or carbon steel coming in here for the welding area, and then you have, you know, planks of wood or plywood coming in and acrylic sheets. So it took us a little while to figure out what sorts of things are used here, but then there's a challenge when people are making something. If they're making something large, that may not fit in one of our storage areas.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So flexibility is central to your life.
Yeah, and being dynamic. The space itself changes probably every 2 to 4 months. We move some things around.
And going back in time, what was this built as?
This building, going back in time, it was a series of nightclubs. It was a venue. They went through a couple periods of not being really occupied. It had a couple of antique dealers in here for a little while. I heard that it was a lamp manufacturer at one point. It was an auto body shop. And then originally, it was the auxiliary livery stables for downtown.
So quite a history.
Quite a history, yeah. It goes back.
About what time do you know when it was first built?
Like 1908 is what I've heard. It may be within, you know, 1918, somewhere around there. The original structure, it's since expanded. Like, about half the building was added on probably 50 years later. This was made by Jo Mangala. She's a local nurse tech, graduated from UNCG. And she joined because she was curious about 3D printing affecting the fashion industry. So she's been printing out these sort of chain link things and then sewing them into different garments. And then she's been printing directly onto fabrics. I don't have any examples of that here right now, but she got so good at doing this, just using the mentor network here, learned how to design in Fusion 360, which is an Autodesk product. That's a plug because I want them to become a sponsor and move to Greensboro maybe one day. But she became so good at it, she now teaches other people how to use a 3D printer. She's become a mentor. And then this BB-8, of course, was all 3D printed, assembled here. And then we have our little textiles area back here. few straight stitch machines and some sergers, some other machines back here, though. A lot of people just join for big tables. In the sewing area, often people have their own resources at home, but having a big table, not having to work on your dining room table or on the floor, is pretty helpful. Another one of our entrepreneurs coming out of this space, this is 3D Upfitters, and Mike started this company here. So he has employed other members to laser cut out this acrylic, actually.
Including me.
He's hired Steve a few times.
The jack of many trades and right. For a few.
So he cuts out this acrylic on the laser engraver, and then he 3D prints all of these fixtures, mm-hmm. and he's been shipping these out around the country. I think he's been doing a lot of sales out in California, where they've instituted some regulations around covering all, enclosing all 3D printers. There's some, you know, there's some potential. We haven't been around 3D printers for a long time, so there's some up in the air about how it affects long-term health. So a lot of 3D printers are now coming out with enclosures to sort of mitigate that. Even if there isn't any sort of effects for long-term health, it does create a better product because you're trying to regulate temperature here, so if you enclose it, it's easier to regulate temperature. And we have a little computer lab, our electronics cave, we like to call it. We have some basic soldering and testing equipment back here. Lots of components inside these cabinets for people to use. We've tried to use every inch of the space as we've grown. Yeah. Like, oh, that's a closet. Could we do something else inside there?
That's really cool.
Here's the laser, the big laser cutter laser engraver. Which, you know, generates lightning in a bottle in the back and then focuses that energy against some mirrors and then down through a lens, which then cuts or engraves into a surface. One of the more popular tools for members because it's really easy to learn how to use. We also use it for a lot of school groups coming through. Kids are usually gravitate towards the 3D printers because 3D printers are so cool. Then they get bored very quickly because a 3D print takes hours.
Right.
So we go to the laser engraver because, one, lasers. And then, two, almost immediate gratification. Right. You know, you cut it out, you etch it, it's really quick, and you can go out with something that you made. There it is, you know?
That's awesome.
Whereas a 3D printer, they're like, bored. What else do we do? What else are we going to do? Back here is our ceramics area. So we got 3 wheels now. We got a little kiln room back here.
So most of the pottery projects here, what are they? Why are they here? What are they for?
So actually, we have a large number of small businesses operating out of the ceramics area, which is really helpful for new members coming in here who just are interested in it as a hobby because they can see what's possible. And a lot of those instructors end up teaching classes here or help out other members as a mentor. You see, actually, this is some experimentation with 3D printing. And so most of these are actually small businesses operating out of the space. This area has, I just like to brag about Greensboro, Guilford County. There's a legacy of making here. And most of the universities have some sort of ceramics program, which is great. The downside is when those students graduate, they realize how good they had it in school, you know, what they had access to, and they realize how expensive that equipment is. So we've been getting a lot of students from these programs, not just ceramics, but from, I mentioned GTCC earlier, the local trades school, you know, machining programs, welding programs, you know, the local art programs, especially the sculpture programs. They have this talent that they've been honing for the past 4 years or, you know, however long in school, and they graduate and they're like, well, I have these loans to pay off and I don't have any money for me to continue my art. And so, unfortunately, they either move away where they can find these sorts of resources or they end up getting away from their passion. They end up finding like a service job or finding another job just so they can make ends meet.
Or you could go to grad school.
Or you can go to grad school and get, you know, deeper into debt and have more fun for a little while. But yeah, so we've been seeing a lot of that sort of activity. It's pretty inspiring. As we walk around and I show you the pieces of equipment, most of the equipment we have here has come through donations from local industry, or we've gotten it through some sort of grant or sponsorship where we purchased it outright. This space, the metal shop especially, and often, you know, a lot of the tools in the wood shop, not a lot of other makerspaces have these sorts of resources, especially in cities this size.
Yeah. Spin off of your manufacturing base here.
Absolutely. I think that is, again, you know, a testament to that legacy of manufacturing here. And not only do we have the tools, but there's a lot of talent that comes in here because of that industry connection here. Actually, one of our members and mentors, Ted, is working with another member on creating some products, I think, for another local business. They're like drill presses on steroids, specifically meant to create very accurate things out of metal. And it's a really big deal for people who are prototyping or fabricating things out of metal to have access to these machines, because they're, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, and they usually require three phases to operate. And then when you have kids come in here and see just cutting out of metal, you know, making parts, you know, see their eyes bulge a little bit and like, what? So somebody made those metal things? It just didn't... Can we peek at what you're all doing?
So we're just setting up.
Okay. Could you just... Yeah. Are you allowed to describe what you're working on?
I don't know. What is this for?
It's a radio show.
Oh. Yeah, I'm just prototyping some parts.
Application for the parts is?
Just outdoor use. So it's kind of just like outdoor climbing stuff.
We'll get this more later when you've got a product we can promote?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And if you didn't have membership here, have you looked into how else you could get this prototyped or where else you could do it?
I would have to buy a CNC machine.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've gone to many fabricators and basically they say it's too difficult.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I have to do it myself.
Well, I'm glad you're making something here. Hopefully one day we'll be able to, I'll be able to hold it and promote it.
Yeah. There's some stock stuff over there.
Okay.
But they're not finished parts though.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just, I'm still troubleshooting the process.
Yeah. The tough part about describing some of the economic development here, because often people are making things that they don't want others to know about, so I can't, like, it's like, hey, we've made this cool climbing gear at the forge. Well, actually, no. Patent's pending. I can't talk about it. And then back here, we have our welding area. Actually, one of our instructors and another staff member here at the forge, this is Allie. Allie, this is Tom.
Hey, Tom.
How are you?
Good. It's nice to meet you.
You too. So you're welding stuff back here?
I am, yeah. I'm working on a railing for a brewery just over on the other side of the train tracks. So there's like a railing on one side, and then now I'm working on the guard rail and the stair rail.
And it's all reuse of industrial equipment?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you. Yeah.
So you just kind of feel your way? And
Yeah, I kind of design it as I... get the structural stuff in place first for all the code regulation, and then kind of add the art part after I do the parts that have to be a certain way.
Yeah, form and function.
Huh? Yeah, yep. I went to school for sculpture, and then I was also did machining and welding for about 10 years with my dad, and so kind of merged the two.
That's some serious rebar, huh?
It is. It kind of... changes the look of it, you know, as it gets bigger. And I actually was working with some like almost 2-inch rebar initially with some of this stuff, and changed some of those designs. But yeah, I enjoy it.
Very cool.
It's very cathartic to get in that zone.
Yeah. What's your name again?
Allie Crawford.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
It's nice to meet you.
You too.
But there's this stigma around making things with students that don't want to go into that as a career path because it doesn't seem interesting or like it could be a fulfilling career pathway, when really, become a machinist or a welder, you can make good money very quickly because there's not enough of them right now. And it's something that we hear, I'm sure you hear about it all the time from employers, Brent, that they just need talent, and trying to get them interested in it really young is really important. There's a lot of great pathways in Greensboro, like the GAP program. Problem is the kids don't know about it, or they're not interested, you know?
The GAP program here is
a Guilford apprenticeship program.
So
I'm Brent Christensen with the Greensboro Chamber. It's an apprenticeship program. Takes kids out of high school, puts them to work in local businesses so that they can learn those skills, those trades, while they're also getting an education at the same time.
So it's temporary? They're out for a semester?
They'll do it for a year or two.
Okay.
And then, quite frankly, probably in 95 to 98% of the cases, they stick on with whatever company they're with and get a full-time job. And so, you know, to Joe's point, yes, you've got to get the attention of the students, but what we've also found is we have to get the attention of the parents as well, right? So I think...
So it sounds like open houses and showcases would
be... And I think to some degree in this country, we told everybody they need to go to college because, right, that's the easiest guidance to anybody. Yeah, you need to go to college. You need to go to college. Not everybody needs to go to college. Not everybody wants to go to college. And here's a great opportunity for them, to Joe's point, to make a good living right out of high school, perhaps right out of a two-year degree, and not have to go to a four-year university, which they weren't interested in, and go and get it.
Not going to apply a lot of that learning.
Yet. Right, and then you're not in debt as well. I mean, you know, we see a lot of those folks burn out of college, and in many cases they feel like they're a failure. And B, they've got this incredible debt now on top of it all. So it's a double whammy. We don't want them to feel like a failure. We don't want them to be in debt. We want to show them a pathway where they don't have to do that. And the apprenticeship program and makerspaces and everything that we're doing in Greensboro and High Point is to make sure they understand this is a place that makes things. Mm-hmm. And there are various routes to a really good living in our community.
It would seem to me, as you alluded to earlier, that school field trips and opening this up to the kids at an early age would be really game-changing.
Yeah. Field trips to their future, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, they get an opportunity to come in and look and see not only how creative they can be, how exciting it can be, but that they can make a serious living out of it as well.
You make the world around it. Like, that makers make our civilization. Right. They build our molds, they make our products, you know, so it's a really exciting career to be in when you actually see the product of your labor. And I think that there's something innately human about manipulating your environment, using tools, creating things. It's a very much an equalizer. And it's also, you know, going back to that hobbyist standpoint, I find if I'm not making something with my hands, you know, at least once a month, that my mental health starts deteriorating. You know, I haven't expressed myself. I think it's just a human urge to work on something, to make something that's physical and see it and have that be a point of pride.
And as time goes on, there are fewer and fewer opportunities in a workplace to do something where you make something where you can show the other person, look what I made.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yeah, we're making a lot of virtual products. Mm-hmm. And people are doing work, but it's...
Well, it's like you talked about being at the computer sending emails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you quantify that? How do you show me that?
Right, yeah. Right. It's some you know, long-term stuff and maybe some emotional support groups. and then a little bit of woodworking on the weekends.
So how does somebody learn more about the makerspace?
You can go to our website, forgegreensboro.org. We also have a pretty active social media. That's actually where most of our marketing efforts go towards, is, you know, posting things that people make inside the space, posting about our programs here.
And what works best for you? Would it be Instagram or Facebook? Where do you get the most engagement?
Either or. If Instagram, we probably have more pictures on Instagram, right, just because it's easy for me to post on Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's on my phone. I just, here we go, right, before I lose the moment. Either one, you know, our hashtags are hashtag Forge Greensboro and then hashtag made at Forge GSO.
All right. Well,
we're good, huh?
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay.
Right on.
So I'm going to stay.
My name is Joe Rotundi. I'm the executive director of Forge Greensboro, a makerspace in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Love it. Joe, thank you for sharing. Very
Thanks
cool. Yeah, great morning.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singal, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.